You're listening to KTEP 88.5 FM, your NPR station for the Southwest. I'm Angela Kocherga, and this is a special edition of The Weekend, an edited version of a live program that aired Thursday night. Horror, heartbreak, and now the healing slowly begins. That's what we're going to talk about during the next half hour with the help of special guests, including Adair Margot, El Paso's First Lady. We'll also hear from Rabbi Jeffrey Myers of the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, which was targeted by a gunman in a mass shooting that killed 11 people in that city. What can El Paso learn from that shared experience? And Celeste Nevarez, a mental health professional, will give us information about coping with trauma and where to get help, thanks to a co-op that is offering services free of charge. But first, we begin with Adair Margot, El Paso's First Lady, a staunch advocate for the arts and culture of our borderland region, who has worked tirelessly to build bridges of understanding. Thank you so much for being here, Adair.
Thank you for inviting me.
These have been some dark days in El Paso, and you've been out there nonstop. What has the experience been like? You've reached out to so many people and heard from so many El Pasoans.
Right. Well, Dee and I have been going to, we got good advice that if you wait for funerals, that a lot of times they happen simultaneously and you can't go to all of them. So we've been going to wakes and visitations and visiting with the families around town at different funeral homes, which it's been such a privilege. You know, you just feel like it's such a privilege to represent and to live in a place like this with people, like the strong people we're meeting. Heartbroken, but strong and resilient.
Yes, that phrase, El Paso Strong, is so much more than a slogan here. It really has become an affirmation of life. We also saw a lot of that on display during our community memorial service last night, where Mayor Dee Margot gave a very compelling talk about how do we move forward, that this can't define us. We also heard from the mayor of Ciudad Juarez, the governor of Texas, and of course, the governor of Chihuahua, and a very high-level Mexican official in the foreign ministry. That was important for this community that includes these three states and two countries. What were your impressions after that memorial?
Well, you know, when I entered it and saw those stars for each of the victims in luminarios, I just burst into tears. And then with the circles of, it was very moving, I thought. And then all the families, I'd gone and seen some of the families up in the suites up above. But you're right, it affected all of us. And when you live in El Paso, it's like, who's up from what side of the border? I mean, people are from both sides, and families are on both sides. I always say the mission. Today I led a tour to the mission in Juarez, built in 1659, the mother mission. And her children are on this side, our missions on the El Paso side, which is emblematic of how we live here.
Yeah, those ties are the ties that bind us. And, of course, the victims were also from both sides of the border.
Absolutely.
And so were some of the survivors. And that stage was filled with the first responders and some of the heroes who really...
One of seven, he'd been a seven-month rookie who went in, you know, not knowing if the shooter was still there. And so we do have a safe city, and we have such wonderful first responders who are here. I mean, they protected us, and they were there so quickly. And it's just meeting those people, you realize we're in good hands. And we all support each other when tragedy hits.
Yeah, and that, of course, that little boy who's really put El Paso on the map for a very different reason, mm-hmm. about all the wonderful things, the 22 good reasons to think of El Paso.
Right. I really loved hearing about that little boy. And there are small things we can do. And I remember when this happened, you know, Dee had called me and told me not to go out. He had just heard there was a shooter. He was out of town and got back home. But, you know, I remember at after 9/11, I'll never forget a little girl saying, you know, why would people do that? And she just said, maybe they didn't know their names. It's like not knowing. Even, and this is a community, we know each other. And I remember my mother's husband, when she remarried after my dad died, he always spoke to people like at the checkout counters, always would call, "Hello, Maria. Thank you. You have such a nice smile." Small things like that, just calling people by name to remember. We're all human beings with our lives, and just lift each other up by whatever we say or whatever kind of expression we have on our faces. And I hear that all the time. Richard Lang at Texas Tech, who moved here from out of town, was up on the stage, and he just said he'd never met people who as friendly or were like that. I think we embrace people and we embrace each other. So it helps you get through times like this.
And we did hear that repeatedly from the speakers at the memorial about how El Paso really is setting the example for the rest of the state and, of course, this region. First ladies end up being comforters during times of tragedy, and you certainly have taken on this role after this massacre. Where will you find comfort in the days ahead, or what would you want to say to people as people struggle to find some way to heal after this?
Well, you know, we're all, when you visit these family, of course, this was, in our minds, it's all cumulative because there were more people killed in one day than are killed in a year. And, you know, it's just cumulative. But when you meet the individual families, like with their loved ones around them, with their faith, with their memories, I love looking at the newspaper and seeing the Johnson family out hitting. I met that wife and that little granddaughter who was protected by her granddaddy there at Walmart. But to have them outside, you know, really, their lives were taken from this earth. They cannot be killed. Their spirits will always be living. And so that can never be taken away. At the time, it seems so dark. But I think I feel like I want to live all the fuller, even for them, you know, that we need to continue. So I love seeing that family out hitting golf balls and remembering their granddaddy. We can never lose. Tom Lee, when he lost his first wife, he said, at first we feel alone, but that we really can never lose any great fine thing. And because it's always with us, it's there to encourage us to accept the gift of each new day and continue to live fully and live for them as well.
And the memory, of course, so powerful. And we saw each has an individual story. It's remarkable. And we will, of course, be thinking about all of these people as we try and move forward, the 22 lives, the precious lives cut short. And I really thank you for coming in to share your experience these past few days. The mayor, it's been a tough almost 2 weeks now.
Yeah, it's been tough for him. But, you know, he's a man of faith. And, you know, the first thing he does in the morning, he goes into his study and he reads scripture. And, you know, he shared, it's like things came to him to share with the people that were so appropriate, you know. And anyway, I'm very proud of him. And he loves this community. He really loves it. It's provided a home for him. He was always uprooted and always felt like El Paso was home.
It's a place a lot of people have made their home. Why, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dear Margot, our First Lady. And we're going to listen now to some of the voices of the people who made time and thought it was important to be at the memorial service.
It means that our community can come together and memorialize those who are lost and give hope to those who survived and also help each other to heal.
Why did you come?
I came because I feel like it's important for all of us to come together as a community, as a family, and to really remember these victims that were targeted, and to just really be supporting of everyone, of them, of their families, and just to support each other.
Well, what made me decide to come was that this is my community, and when a few hurt, we all hurt.
So how does something like this, what does it mean to you?
I mean, it's cool to see the support of the community, for sure. You know, it's nice to know that they're, I mean, it's not only for the victims, but, like, you know, the stores themselves.
To everyone who was there and mm-hmm. all the families.
Yeah. So, it's nice. I mean,
The healing's going to take a long time, but is it a step?
Yeah, step by step for sure.
That last voice was Alex Gonzalez. He's an employee who worked at the Walmart where the attack happened, and he attended the memorial service with his four-month-old son and his wife. We also heard from Betty Ann Halliburton, Elise Sanchez, and Debbie Torres, El Pasoans. And, of course, we had people from Ciudad Juarez in attendance, as well as Las Cruces and other parts of southern New Mexico. You're listening to a special hour-long program, El Paso Strong. The mass shooting August 3rd was the deadliest attack on Hispanics or Latinos in the U.S. An attack in Pittsburgh on the Tree of Life Synagogue was the deadliest targeting the Jewish community in the United States. Rabbi Jeffrey Myers of the Tree of Life Synagogue has graciously agreed to join us by phone to talk about this shared tragedy. Rabbi Myers, thank you so much. How are you, your faith community, and Pittsburgh doing?
Rabbi? I would say that it's not even day by day. I think, as you'll discover in El Paso, it's literally hour by hour how people are doing, and there's not one answer. It's as though if you could take 100 slots from 0 being the worst possible to 100 being the best possible, you could fill people in every slot. And that's how we find ourselves, and I would surmise that you will continue to find the population in El Paso and greater as you continue to work out the trauma day by day.
What would you want El Paso to know about that healing process, since you're further along? And as you said, it is day by day, and it's very individual. But what can we learn from your experience as this city tries to move forward?
Well, I can tell you that, at least from my experience, that healing will be lifelong. I don't know if one is ever fully healed, that healing is just going to continue day by day. There will be moments where you feel certainly a lot better, and the moments in the day where you suddenly just don't feel well, that there will be reminders of the horror that continue to surround people in all senses. The most important thing, I think, is for everyone to recognize is that this is not something that happens upon one person. This is something that impacts an entire community. So the community, as they've done in Pittsburgh and as I see they're doing in El Paso, work together as one big community to help each other, to keep an eye on each other, because you're there as one community. Who you are, where you're from, none of that matters. We're all one people. We're all human.
I've heard you and seen your writings about speaking about the H word and how these attacks and crimes should be looked at. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, thank you for reading some of my writings. I appreciate that. I took a pledge around, I think it was November 6th or 7th. We had a vigil in a city park, and I was asked to speak. And up to that date, which was nearly 2 weeks after the massacre in my synagogue, I had really not written anything down. I was just fortunate enough that God gave me the right inspiration to hopefully say the right words in the right order. And as I approached the stage, I was asked to speak for about 3 minutes. The sudden inspiration came to me that, and I'll use the word once, the word hate is a four-letter word. And like other four-letter words, we characterize them as obscenities. It's an obscenity. It's a severe word. And when we use that word, we become more emotional in how we speak, and that inevitably will lead to emotional acts, most generally of a negative type. And to me, it made perfect sense that if you just don't like something, just say, I don't like it. Or in my case, I just call it H speech. We have too much uncivil discourse in the United States, and we need to return to civil discourse. And one simple step is just tone down your rhetoric, tone down how you speak. If you tone it down, perhaps there'll be less emotional baggage with your words. A shooting is one horrifically severe manifestation of hate speech. So are beating up someone because of their sexual orientation, or spray painting horrific language about a person or a group of people, taking a noose and hanging it in someone's locker at their place of employment. All of these are all manifestations. They're the acts, but the root cause is speech itself. So to me, we need to focus more on the root cause. It's like, if imagine your lawn. If you cut off just the green on the top of the root, the green will grow back again. You need to carefully excise the root. And to me, it's our language.
And finally, what would you want El Pasoans, just under 2 weeks, to think about as people try and move forward? As you said, I mean, the healing process is there, but we will always remember those who lost their lives and those who are still recovering from their injuries.
I wish I could, you know, sort of make it seem such an easy thing to share with the El Paso community, because there's so much that I learn and continue to learn from our experiences to hope to share. But I can say this: there is the love of the world is out there, and it will continue to envelop and hug the citizens of El Paso. And that love, which comes from Pittsburgh, which comes from Christchurch, which comes from Charleston, which comes from all cities who've been impacted with this violence, and cities who have not personally witnessed violence like this. There are more good people out there than there are these evil people. Good will always win. I've seen that in the cards and letters and gifts that we continue to get now 9 months out, of people saying to us how they grieve, how they mourn. And they reassure me that there are far more good, decent people out there, and that we need to keep that in mind, that the monstrous behavior of one person doesn't define humanity, that there is so much good out there. Let's focus on all of the good. Let's do good acts on a regular basis to reassure and remind each other that there are so many good people out there. And I think the good folks of El Paso know that. They just need to help reassure each other. And we here in Pittsburgh say to you, we know how you feel, and we're here to send our love and to reassure you that you don't stand alone in this horror, that we feel it deeply as you do.
Rabbi Myers, that means so much to so many people here in El Paso. Thank you for making time and for your words of wisdom and comfort. Really appreciate it.
And I hope moment by moment, people can little by little find a little more strength, a little bit more comfort as the days go by.
Thank you, Rabbi Myers.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Is investigating the mass shooting in El Paso as a hate crime and an act of domestic terrorism. The gunman drove more than 600 miles to attack El Paso because we are on the border and because of who lives here, according to police statements. This is difficult for adults to understand, much less children. Here are some of the voices of parents who brought their children of all ages to the makeshift memorial outside Walmart. It begins with Clarissa Hernandez and her son Ezra, who were holding up handmade signs offering free hugs when I met them.
How do you explain this? What were you able to tell?
Well, let Ezra know that, you know, our city's still safe. He's still safe. And the person who did this was not somebody from our community, thank God. And you know, I just talk to him about it every day, especially, like, you know, him going back to school, you know, that everything's going to be okay, to follow the procedures and rules that are placed in school, that they're there to protect them. That's really all that we can really do, and just be more cautious, you know, when we're out in the street.
So I'm glad that we're all here as one, like almost all of Paso here.
We talked about the kids with the kids yesterday. It's important they need to know, and they need to hear from us.
And what?
Because they're going to hear. It's important they need to know there's no place for hate like this anywhere. It's not okay. It's not acceptable. And I think they need to hear that early. Sheltering is not going to... Sheltering wasn't the way for us. I think the way to prevent this is to talk to them early about this and how bad it is. And they need to see the tears. They need to see the hurt. They just need to feel it.
And you see the like outpouring of support, too, and love.
I think it's awesome. El Paso is a strong city. We're going to pull through this.
Va a tomar mucho tiempo porque nos dañaron mucho. Nos dañaron mucho. Y rompieron a nuestra paz.
That's the... Those are the people who dyes flowers.
They Well, thank you for coming today.
That's a lot of love right there.
That is a lot of love. That's important.
To give them heart balloons.
That's a lot of love.
That last little boy I interviewed at the memorial was very fidgety and didn't want to say much until the very end. He was more interested in talking about Lego trains, but then suddenly as I was leaving, he focused on the flowers and the heart-shaped balloons. And though he was only 7, he clearly understood the message of love. Very powerful statement from that child. And the woman I spoke to in Spanish is Claudia Zarate, who owns a daycare service. And I also interviewed Tina, a native of Germany, Tina Duncan. She was a mother of 2 there, a 6-year-old daughter and a 9-year-old son. And she says they're a military family who now call El Paso home. We're going to talk a little bit about how families are coping and what to do in cases of trauma. Joining me now is Celeste Nevarez, a licensed professional counselor and interim clinical director for Emergence Health Network, which is partnering with Atlantis Health Services and the El Paso Psychiatric Center for the EP Strong Counseling Co-op to provide counseling free of charge to those who need it. Welcome, Celeste.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, what do you think of as you hear those parents and children out at that memorial?
You know, we've been hearing things the last, 10 days now, and I think the toughest has been the parents and kids, only because parents are nervous about what to say, how to say it, what verbiage to use, and trying to coach some of them through that so that they feel comfortable and that the child feels comfortable having these conversations. And so it's tough to hear, but I think it's empowering other parents to feel comfortable to have these conversations so that we can all heal together.
Well, what are some tips for parents? And of course, it depends on the age of the child.
That's key, is meet them where they're at. If a child is comfortable or capable of formulating a question, then they deserve an honest answer. And so meeting them at their developmental level, you know, you wouldn't speak to a 3-year-old the same way you'd speak to a 13-year-old. And so meeting them where they're at and what you know your child to be at emotional stages and where they can handle. And meeting them there.
Well, let's talk about trauma and the levels of trauma. There were the people who were directly impacted, had family members who were killed, and they were there. They witnessed that. People who were injured, people who were in that Walmart, and of course the rest of us who saw it and heard about it later, and continue to feel the pain of that horrible day.
I'm so glad that we're talking about that. Thank you for asking that, because we think about trauma and we think of primary. Like if you were in that Walmart, then that is the only trauma, when in fact there's a vicarious or secondary trauma. So the first responders who arrived on scene and are treating those, that is maybe they weren't there when it happened, but they're treating those individuals. And so vicarious trauma can be undue unto all of us, watching the news, seeing those images. And so we feel as though we were there. And that is in and of itself traumatic. And then there's a residual trauma, just being an El Pasoan or having driven through here. You know, I'm getting messages from people all over the United States that said, we just visited you. How are you? And they feel impacted, although they're not here. And then along with that, there's this guilt. well, I wasn't there, so I shouldn't feel this way. And that's not true. This affects all of us at different levels, and we have to address those traumas and the levels that they're at. Obviously, like the 3 and 13-year-old, we're going to speak to somebody who was in that Walmart versus somebody who's visited El Paso once very differently in a clinical setting, but we're not going to minimize that trauma. We would never say, well, oh, you know, don't live here. Like the family that, the military family, this is home to them. We would never say, oh, well, you're not from here. We would never minimize that. And so addressing all levels of trauma and knowing that we were all impacted in one form or fashion.
In the moment, pain and fear and anxiety, but then it could come back. Talk a little bit about what that is.
Yeah, or they might not be feeling it right now. And the next wave, as I call it, will be coming in very shortly. And so I don't want to ignite any fear or some anxiety like, oh, it's going to come up again and creep up on me. But really, I want to just normalize the fact that this might either take a while for some of you who maybe aren't feeling anything just yet, and those of you that are maybe feeling a little bit better, if a couple weeks from now it starts, that wave comes back in again, that is okay too. You know, grief and is a place, is a journey, not a destination or a place that you just visit. And so this is going to be a process for all of us.
Signs to look for, and are they, I imagine, different in adults and teenagers and children?
Absolutely. That irritability that we can write off as they're just grouchy or they're just lazy, right? I've had a couple parents talk to me about how the smallest things are triggering their children, and instead of maybe crying that we would see that sadness, it's coming in the form of irritability or temper tantrums in children. Lack of sleep, anger outburst, frustration, sadness, lack of the ability to focus or maintain attention in everyday tasks, disassociation. I got home today, but I'm not really sure if I remember the drive home. How did I get here? Yeah, there's a lot of signs and symptoms, and it varies from person to person.
What should people do if they do think that they're feeling some of these symptoms? I mean, you have this co-op. Tell us about that and how people can get help and where.
Yeah, this co-op is such a great opportunity. We've partnered with some of our friends from other agencies and other local mental health authorities, and we're here to serve. And so some folks, like I said, might be saying, well, I wasn't there. I don't feel like I should go. No, just come in, explore. Even just sitting in a room full of people who feel the same way, that confusion, that sadness, that frustration even, we welcome you to come into our circle and heal collaboratively, because when we are together, we're stronger. And so please come out and join us, and you're welcome to sit in our group. We do have a couple extra staff on standby if you need to be seen, you know, individually. We can accommodate that as best we can. We're trying to serve everybody, but we invite anybody and everybody who's feeling any kind of way about this to come join us so that we can heal together.
So, Celeste, the very public, we're seeing vigils, we're seeing, you know, last night we had the community memorial service, we have visitations and funerals. How does that help people, especially last night? A lot of people said they wanted to be there, that this was to them part of that very, very beginning healing process.
Acknowledgement is medicine. Just having our feelings recognized or acknowledged by other people, to sit in a crowd or a baseball stadium and feel like whatever it is that you're feeling, that sadness, that shame, that frustration, again, any of those feelings, and to sit and see so many people who share those same emotions, and you acknowledge that emotion out of them and they acknowledge that emotion within you, is healing in and of itself. And so these types of moments where we're all just joined together are such a great form of medicine and healing, especially in trauma.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of The Weekend, and special thanks to producer and engineer Dee Wu. I'm Angela Kocherga, and this is KTEP 88.5 FM, your NPR station for the Southwest.